Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
All right, Jake, let's go. Come on. There we go. Mm-hmm. There we go. Hey, everybody, I'm Kyle Rosedahl. Welcome back to Make Me Smart on a Monday, making today make sense. It's what we do.
I'm Marielle Segarra. It is What Did We Miss Monday? So we will catch you up on today's news and, you know, whatever you missed over the weekend. There's really only one big story, right?
Yeah, there is one big story. It continues to be the story, I guess. I was thinking today about how long it's going to continue to be the story, and I'm not taking any bets. I do kind of wonder about that. But yeah, there is one thing going on. That's it.
Yeah.
Which is, by the way, sorry, not... Yeah, well, so we'll start, yeah, obviously, with some of the, you know, the headline news about the sanctions and the collapse of the ruble and central banks going after other central banks. But the thing about it is, and we'll get to this in a minute, there are other news stories happening that on any other day would be the global lead, right? Mm-hmm. It'd be on the top of the news on every NPR newscast, in every newspaper, and on television, and it's just not. And that's fine, because a land war in Europe is a big deal. But I guess, you know, perspective and context, I suppose. Anyway, so
yeah,
you go ahead. What do you like of the big story of the day? And then I'll throw mine in there.
All right. Yeah. Well, on the ruble, I was thinking about this, and I know you guys covered this on, Kristen covered this on Marketplace tonight. I was talking, yeah, to her about it. So we know that the collapse of the ruble, we know what it'll mean for Russians, you know, the evaporation of their savings and just the inability to buy the basic things that they need. One thing I'm wondering is, what does it mean for the global economy, if anything? Like, what are, yeah, the, I feel like there are knock-on effects to everything, but what are they? That's what I couldn't exactly figure out today.
So here's my understanding of this. Everybody's going to be looking for dollars. Everybody's going to be looking for dollars. It's the global reserve currency. It's stable. It's universally accepted. Oil is denominated in dollars. So everybody is going to want dollars. And the question is, are there enough dollars out there? And one of the things to look at for a sign of market agita is whether or not the Federal Reserve sets up a series of swap lines like it did in the beginning of the financial crisis, of the pandemic, when the markets were looking really shaky, so that everybody who needs dollars to meet their obligations, whether it's money market funds so they don't break the buck or overnight facilities or whatever, so that everybody who can get dollars, who needs dollars, can get dollars. And I think that'll be really interesting. You know, Powell is testifying on Wednesday and Thursday, I think, Humphrey Hawkins is coming around. So it's semiannual monetary policy report to Congress. And he will certainly be asked about this when he goes to testify. So what the Fed is doing in terms of swap lines and dollar liquidity is going to be a big, big deal. So let's look out for that. That's one thing I'm keeping an eye on.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you know, the other thing I was thinking about when it came to the ruble, too, is what its collapse means politically in Russia or geopolitically, because it creates a kind of desperation in the population. Mm-hmm. And what does that lead to? I think that's what led to Putin's rise to power, right? In the late 90s, yeah, after the,
yes,
collapse of the ruble,
exactly,
back,
right,
then.
Yes. Yes.
And it's what led to Hitler's rise to power in Germany in the 1930s, right? So, I mean, we could argue we're already there. You already have a Putin in Russia, but it does create a situation and a mood in Russia. And what does that lead to politically?
I think that's totally right. The one thing I would want to say, and Kristen pointed out this out in her spot today, Kristen Schwab did. The collapse of the ruble hurts the Russian economy, yes, but it hurts individual Russians, and we need to be really clear-eyed about this. That's the point. That's the, mm-hmm, point of these sanctions, punishment. And the Biden administration and the West are betting on economic collapse or something close to it to make ordinary Russians realize that they don't necessarily want Vladimir Putin running the country anymore. And we need to be really clear-eyed about that, because it's unsavory, right? It's not a nice thing. Innocents and children are going to not have enough food or what have you. But that's really what's going on here.
Yeah. Well, that's the shock and awe part that we talked about the other day.
Right.
That is the strategy. And it's not palatable, but at the same time, you know, innocents and children in Ukraine are dying.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the choice, totally. I guess. Something else that caught my eye, and I think Stephen Beard also covered this on the show, is Germany upping its defense spending.
Yeah.
And I've been thinking about this because I did a fellowship in Germany a few years back. It was actually 2016. Oh. And we went to NATO and we went to the European Commission and we talked about Russia. We talked about what was coming. One of the big points was that, you know, Germany and other EU nations had committed to upping their defense spending to 2% of their GDP, but it was just not going to happen in Germany. And part of that, Germany has long hesitated to have a strong military because, in partly as penance for World War I and World War II, it's cultural in a lot of ways. And its defense spending hasn't been that high since just after the Cold War. So this is a really interesting shift. And it's now committed, you know, more than 2%, to put more than 2% of its GDP towards defense spending. It's a big cultural change in addition to a practical one.
Absolutely. And look, Germany is the European economic superpower, right? And what they do matters. This is the whole thing that President Trump was talking about, you know, he framed it the wrong way. He said they owe us money. That's not true, right? But the common defense commitment is 2% of GDP, and many European nations, Germany among them, the richest economy in Germany, had not been meeting it, and now they are. And it's interesting that it took the threat of a land war in Europe, an actual land war in Europe, actually, to concentrate the mind, you know?
Yeah.
It's a big deal. Totally big deal. I'm glad you pointed that out.
And then I guess just a couple quick mentions on Russia stories I read this weekend that are less economic, but some of the coverage has done a really great job at interviewing just ordinary people about what this is like for them. And there was a story from Reuters of a mother from Ukraine who basically brought a couple children to safety who were a stranger's children. The husband or the father had like two kids and he went to the border and he wasn't allowed to leave Ukraine because he had to go fight. So he basically handed off his kids to this woman who took them across the border and waited for their mother to come from Italy and meet them. And they just, the two women just embraced for, you know, 5 minutes or something like that. And she became a sort of surrogate mom to these kids for a short amount of time. Stories like that. I mean, it's just wild. Or a grandmother sitting in the subway station with her family and talking about how her own, I believe it was grandparents, experienced World War II, and she's in a state of disbelief, and she just said, like, this cannot be my life. Like, I can't believe this is happening.
Yeah. That was on the Daily episode about the Battle of Kiev, right?
Yes, that was from the Daily.
Yeah. Right. So the New York Times is doing great work. NPR's got reporters over there. You know, Leila Fadel had a piece this morning from the Polish side of the Ukrainian-Poland border. I mean, they're doing great stuff over there and getting no sleep and are in, you know, at risk for their lives. So consume that content and contribute to your local public radio station, too. That's all I'm saying. Okay, so here's my little, and it's a little niche-y of my interest as an aviation guy, but the world's biggest airplane has been destroyed by Russian invaders to Kiev. The Antonov 225, the biggest airplane in the world. Its wingspan is as long as a football field. It's got six engines on it. Biggest cargo plane in the world, carries 250 tons worth of cargo. Used to carry the Soviet space shuttle, which never actually flew itself, was destroyed. And it's just sad. Only one ever built.
Wow.
One of them ever built by a Kiev-based aviation company called Antonov. Anyway, that's a little sad.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Just collateral
damage, I guess, is what that is.
I wonder if was targeted, because I don't know much about airplanes.
Good question.
Powerful plane or like a very useful plane to have?
Not Yeah, not militarily significant. It was mostly cargo and humanitarian aid and those kinds of things. Like it gotcha. Carried humanitarian aid to Haiti after the earthquakes and stuff. But it's just it's a little symbolic of wars. Just sucks, man. War just sucks. Just
everything
sucks.
About it. It's the loss of life, the loss of cities, and you know, and not to compare them, you know, at all. But the fact that there was a woman who was interviewed. I can't remember. I think it might have been the Daily too. Who said, "I'm so angry. It's beautiful outside. It's springtime. I don't know mm-hmm. where she is because mm-hmm. what I've seen in Ukraine, it looks like it's freezing. But yeah, it's like terrible. She was like, it's springtime, and I'm angry that war has been forced on. Like, yeah. I just want peace. I don't want this. Yeah.
Yeah. And last I heard, by the way, nothing coming out of those talks in Belarus between Russia and,
no.
and Ukraine. So I don't know where this is going. I don't know where this is going. All right. Couple of other big stories, which, as I said, would ordinarily be a global lead today. The first one for me is this report from the IPCC, the International Panel on Climate Change. Anyway, their latest report from the United Nations, basically saying climate change is happening and the risks and dangers are mounting faster than our ability to adapt to them is, which is just terrifying. And look, people have been saying for years we're coming to the tipping point, and clearly we're past it. And that is just deeply, deeply stressful. Deeply stressful.
Yep. I don't even know what to add on that front. It seems like it's the more you hear about it, the more people hear about it, I think the more numb they get to it in some ways.
Yep.
It's like, oh yeah, that again.
I think that's right.
You know, sky's falling. But we know it's real and it's here. And yet, like, there was a Supreme Court case today. The justices of the Supreme Court heard arguments in this case over air pollution and the ability of the federal government in the U.S. to regulate greenhouse gas emissions from, I believe it's power plants, right? And it doesn't look like it's going to go in the administration's favor, and it will make it a lot harder for any presidential administration in the U.S. to regulate around climate change.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, where are the solutions?
Today's not even Hollow Nail Shell Thursday. What the hell are we doing here? Jesus. Anyway,
yeah.
Sorry for swearing. all right, let's move briskly to a Make Me Smile, and then we'll get people to get on their way. How about that, Jake? Hit us. All right, this one's at me and for me, I guess, based on something I said where I disparaged the early set of banana pants that I got, which, if we remember, came up to like my armpits, if we recall. I think we posted a picture. Anyway, Monday Make Me Smiles come from all y'all. We get it that the news has been fairly grim, but we do kind of count on you to let us know what is amusing out there because we can't always find it. So get them to us if you like, makemesmart@marketplace.org. Here's this email that came from Christine. Here's what she says. Yes, Kai, the banana pants never fit, LOL. They are hella big, but I do tie them around her ankles so as to taper them in some semblance of sweatpants. Love them anyway, and love y'all. Rock on. Well, Christine, that was very nice. Mine, I think, have been designated to the rag bag in this house. Don't tell Molly, but I think that's what happened to mine. Shh.
Do you, like, clean with
don't
them?
Don't tell Molly.
The rag bag?
Well, yeah, you know, you need
like
rags.
You clean your car with
rags.
Or whatever?
You need rags.
Well, I don't understand, Kai. You're pretty tall, right? Like, how big are these pants? How could they fit anybody?
So you know, it's interesting. So, I have very short legs for my height. I mean, look, I'm only 6'1", but I have very short legs. And in point of fact, more than perhaps anybody wants to know, the very first time my mother-in-law met me when my wife and I were still dating. And my mother-in-law is a very nice and polite woman, and she's one of those who like doesn't say anything if there's nothing nice she can say. The first response, the first reaction to me that she said to my then girlfriend was, "Well, he's very long waisted, isn't he?" And I'm like, "Oh,
that's so strange."
Yeah, I know. She's a lovely woman. She's a lovely woman, and I don't think she listens to this podcast. Although maybe she does. I don't know. Yeah, but, you know, we have a great relationship, but I am kind of long-waisted. So that's why they didn't fit. That's where I'm going with that one. That's where I'm going.
Oh, wow.
Anyway.
I got to say, if my significant other's like parent said, if their first comment was like, wow, what big hands she has or something, I'd be well, like, oh.
I give her a hard time about it every now and then. I give her a hard time about it every now and then. Oh, man. All right, we're going to go before I get in more trouble. No. Just very, very normal sized hands. We're leaving. Come back tomorrow. Okay. Me and Kimberly are going to talk more about Ukraine with somebody who can help us break down what it means that an actual land war has come to Europe after 75 or 80 years of collective peace. Yes, for the economy, but also sort of this moment in history, because it's a big deal and we're living through it, which is not always fun. Let's just say that.
Yep. And if you have been thinking about your answer to the Make Me Smart question, which is, what is something you thought you knew that you later found out you were wrong about? Send it to us either as a voice memo or in an email to makemesmart@marketplace.org. Or you can call and leave us a voice message. You know the number, maybe by this point, 508-UB-SMART.
I'm right now thinking back to the exchanges I've had with my mother-in-law about this podcast. I don't think she listens, but she does follow me on Twitter. So that could be problematical too. Anyway, Make Me Smart is produced by Marissa Cabrera with help from Mark A. Green. Today's program was engineered by Jake Cherry.
Our senior producer is Bridget Bodner, and the director of On Demand is Donna Tam. And I'm really the one who roasted your mother-in-law, not you, so that helps.
That's fair. I think I just shared a family secret or something. I don't know. It's part of the founding mythology of my marriage. I don't know. Whatever.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.